Hey everybody, if you are welcome to the Inner Circle Mentoring Call for September, and I'm Sue Ludwig, and I'm it's funny because we're on video, so if you're listening to this later, you only hear the audio, but occasionally if you hear us, it's a little bit different language to talk to when we can see people. So this is Sue, and Janine Craig, Director of Education, is here as well.
Hey everybody.
And so thanks for being here with us. I'm just gonna run through real quick regular housekeeping things first. One is that you guys are, if you're on the call, you're currently muted and you'll be able to ask questions by, if you're on the phone only, you're gonna hit *9 to raise your hand. And if you're on the computer only, you can either hit the little button to your right that'll say raise your hand, or you can type in the chat window. If you hover over the bottom of your screen, you'll see chat, and you can type in that window as well, and we'll answer your questions. We also have emailed questions that we will get to if there's time after the live questions. So if you showed up here live, your questions take precedence over the email questions. As always, this call does not take the place of being mentored or oriented in the NICU in the first place. As we obviously can't give you real-time patient feedback or something in this session, but we can, you know, answer some of your questions and hopefully provide some guidance as to what's going on in your world. This is being recorded and it will be in the member hub later, and sometimes we post resources as well if we discuss them during the call. So, anything I forgot, Janine?
I do not think so.
And to whoever I let out of the waiting room and then put you back in at first. So I know you're on the computer and we were just chuckling because Zoom is a little new for us. So I accidentally let you in and I had to put you back out. So sorry about that.
I think that's our 007 friend.
Yes, exactly. We can see you there, but I did have to put you back in there just for a sec. So any of you who are here live, we can see you coming in here. Again, do you have any questions right off the bat? Because we want to give you, you know, made time for this out of your day in live time. We want to respect that and answer your questions first. So again, you can raise your hand if you're on the computer by clicking raise your hand on the right, or you can hover over the bottom of your screen and see the chat window and type something in. If you're on the phone only, you can hit *9 and it'll show us that you're raising your hand. So we're gonna just give you a second to do one of those things before we answer any email questions. Usually it takes one person to unleash the verbal questions and it's like, oh wait, I wanna ask something too.
So then it's game on.
Yes, then it's game on. Like I think we barely got the email questions last time, but because of that. So it's all good, whatever happens, but just know that this is safe and there are no silly questions and that there are things that we absolutely don't know the answer to and that we will try to find you better resources for if we cannot answer something for you. So we just want you to be able to have what we did not, which is just somebody to reach out to in the universe and say, am I doing this right? What do you think about this? Be a sounding board, that kind of thing. So no worries there. All right, I do not see any hands raised yet, do you?
I do not.
Okay, so while you're thinking of your questions, those of you who are here live, we'll start with one email question and we'll just keep checking for your raised hands. You do not have to wait for us to cue you to raise your hand, okay? So at any time, just raise your hand. And you can also provide feedback to a question that we address. So if you have something that you want to add, please feel free to do that as well. This is not meant to just be us. We have great expertise within the membership, so feel free to comment on someone else's question. You might have the answer that we don't. So first question that was emailed says, we are reviewing our NICU charges for OT and just wondering what others are charging for OT services in the NICU. And I believe most common, and besides the bowel charges, are typically therapeutic activity and or I personally used to use therapeutic activity most occasionally therapeutic exercise. But Janine, do you have any others that are just common ones that you're using?
Those are the most used. from my experience. I mean, sometimes they, yeah, I'll just leave it at that. Those are the most commonly used.
And we had a special topic call, I believe, that Kelly did a while ago. It was on the new CPT code. So if you do look in your member hub, there's also a special topic call on sort of the new guidelines and things like that that has been done previously. So if that's helpful, but those are the two we have used the most besides the eval charge.
Yeah, that's a great point about the CPT codes. And I don't know if anybody that's listening, if they use any other charges. So
feel free to type them in if you're on the computer, or raise your hand and let us know if you're using something else that you find helpful. We'll be glad to hear about that too. All right, you live people on the call, raise hands before we keep moving through email questions. *9 if you're on the phone, or raise your hand via the little link on the right if you're on the computer. We're just keeping an eye out if you see us looking around. All right, so I'll go on to the second email question, which is, we started using the Z-Flow products in our NICU. They're wonderful and really expensive. Are there any NICUs out there that have a policy or guideline for cleaning and reusing this product? So does anyone who's live on the call, do you have an answer for this question? You can raise your hand. Do you have a cleaning and reusing protocol for Z-Flow? And while you're thinking about raising your hand for that, if you do, one thing that we would just always recommend, because this is sort of what you'll be held to, is what the manufacturer recommends about reuse. So I would look at what they recommend as far as those protocols, and often they'll be happy to send you things. If you ever need, they exhibited at NANT last year, if you ever need a contact person for that type of company, please feel free to come to us and say, hey, do you have a sales contact or something for this company? And we'll be happy to share that with you. But that's what I would recommend in the absence of someone on the call raising their hand to find out. And Janine, do you have anything specific to recommend for that?
Not specific regarding the actual policy and guidelines, because I do think that the manufacturers are held we're holding them more and more accountable as years go by to doing things and having considerations for neuroprotective or developmentally supportive care with their products. But I think that another avenue for getting information as a therapist from our colleagues is, if, for example, if you're a CNT, there's a CNT Facebook page, there's Ignite that has educational component pieces that might help answer some questions, or you can post something with NANT as well to see what people are using, but definitely manufacturer guidelines to begin with.
And just related to that, thank you, Janine, because I totally forgot about the other pages, so thank you. The other thing I just wanted to call to your attention while we're on this topic, not about Z-Flow, but I thought it was helpful in the International Week, Neonatal Therapy Week emails that you got. I think one of them on the 19th, on Wednesday, that you received, Dr. Brown did provide their cleaning instructions and some information on that in that email. So obviously you're a member if you're listening to this call, and you would have received that email. And I believe it was on the 19th, the one that had Dr. Brown's resource in it. So I just wanted to mention that since we're on the topic of cleaning, because we get that question a lot as well. And then just to go back before I forget to that, the charging question. So thank you, Laura, who's on our NANT team here. She posted that the special topic call that had that CPT information by Kelly Walsh Hill was in May of 2017. So if you're kind of looking through the My Courses in the Member Hub, it's May of 17, and it was titled A Conversation on CPT Evaluation Codes with the NICU Population. So again, that was on that type of talk, but just if that's helpful. And I do not see any hands raised. Again, if you're just getting to the call, you're going to hit *9 if you're on the phone to raise your hand. And if you are on the computer, you can click on raise my hand, or you can put a question in the chat, type a question in the chat, and we will be able to see that and answer that as well. So also feel free to comment on anything or raise your hand to comment on any of these questions if you have some feedback. Okay, so, and if you're just here to listen, that is awesome and fine as well, but I just want to make sure we give you the chance to, since you took time to be here live, to get your questions answered. So next question that was emailed, because we don't see any, okay, here's one. Do you do and recommend supported sitting as an exercise for preterm infants? So, as far for a preterm infant, I would say no. I don't know if it's a preterm infant who is now postterm or there's or far postterm or anything like that, but I would keep those types of things in the developmental trajectory of what your what would be typical for that postmenstrual age. So in that way, that's why I'm saying no, and I'm thinking, Janine, you're agreeing with me as you're nodding your head. So thank you for that question. And again, you can type in questions. So thank you for typing that in. The next email question, since I don't see any hands raised or typed questions at the moment, is when treating infants in the NICU with clavicle fractures, how do you address management? Traditionally, our hospital has wrapped infant in a, quote, pledge of allegiance position using 2-inch ACE bandage for 7 to 10 days following delivery. Alternatively, we have used safety pins on infants' long sleeve shirt to also provide support to avoid startling onset of injury. Safety pins are also used in car seat. Do other hospitals immobilize for acute phase or allow infant movement to tolerance? So does anybody who's here, I'm just curious what anybody's listening, do you wanna type or raise your hand and let us know what you do for clavicle fractures and any input on that? And Janine, I think you had said similar-ish practice in the units that you're in?
Yeah, similar. Yeah, pretty similar.
No, and so, okay. And mostly to prevent pain and sort of the dangling of the arm. The other thing that we wanted to present to you, Lindsay, who asked this question, is just that I happened to, one of our members of launch, our leadership program, she was actually just talking about how they've updated their both clavicle and humeral fracture guidelines for their unit. And I messaged her and she was able to tell me it was fine to share her email. So her name is Amelia Foos, F-O-O-S. And we're going to post her email with the recording of this. But also if you happen to be listening, I'm not sure, Lindsay, if you're on the call, or if you want to go ahead and post Amelia's email to everyone who's just on the call now, and that way if they came live, they can get that real quick, and then we can also just post it with the recording as well. And she said she was happy to just talk to anybody or email about what their current guidelines are. And so.
Typed question.
Okay, you can go ahead if you want.
Okay, so Amy typed in, how long are your treatment sessions? It was discussed yesterday that just observing an activity and seeing how the infant responds is a good treatment activity. I believe this and do this, but how much do you watch and then teach? I could spend hours in the NICU. Amy, that is really a great question. Thank you for asking it out loud. So Sue, do you want me just to start kind of with my
sure.
thoughts? Mm-hmm. So I think where this, in thinking about your observation time, if you will, as neonatal therapists, part of our work is observation time based on the theoretical reasons that we are actually in the NICU, in looking at, because not everything is a hands-on assessment, right? So if you think about your, and you asked specifically about treatment activity, so I'm going to talk about assessment and I'm going to talk about activity. So as we know with assessment, some of those assessments are observational, and you're looking at a number of different things depending on what assessment. You're doing in the gestational age of the baby, et cetera, et cetera. If you're thinking about a good treatment activity, I'd like to know, like if you've got an idea of what a treatment activity looks like in your, from what you're talking about, because in my mind's eye, I might be thinking about something very different. But I might look at, for example, if you're trying a positioning intervention with a baby that you've had some challenges with in the past for, pick a topic, maybe they're having some intubation challenges and you're working with nursing on positioning. You may spend some time at the bedside observing that baby in a particular position. Let's say they're an older baby and they have more motor movements. And so you're looking at the supportive protective measures for that baby. And so your observation, you may not have your hands on that baby, but you may be doing some observational pieces. That's just like one random idea out of my brain. Sue, do you have like other things you want to add to that?
Sure. And just as far as the, how long the sessions are, and then the question of observing, like how much you observe versus how much you teach. So, I mean, one thing is how long they are, I think just highly depends on the situation, just like it would for any patient. So depends on their acuity, their tolerance, what you're doing, or are the parents there and you're teaching, or is it, you know, so it really depends. It could be, you know, 12 minutes or it could be 45 minutes, but it really depends on the situation and what you're doing. And obviously with, you know, all of your observation skills about what the infant is tolerating and the purpose, et cetera. So I think it's hard to say how long the sessions are until we would know what you were doing in the session. And then as far as kind of how do you know what to observe, like when to observe and when to teach. And I think what I would say is, you know, what are you observing? And why are you observing that thing? So if you're saying, you know, when I did my neurobehavioral or, you know, neurological assessment, I noticed that there's a little asymmetry or something. So then you might come back another time and say, I just want to watch the infant during care, you know, without being in the bed, without anything, because I want to stand at the head of the bed and or the foot of the bed and watch them move. That is more of an assessment of, you know, you observing how the infant is moving and responding and state changes and all the motor parts of that as well. So that would be something that I might intentionally go and observe. But then say I go another day and the parents are there. I may be teaching the parent, you know, this is what I know. This is what I'm seeing. This is how you can support your infant and be more in teaching them and incorporating that into my session. And then as far as if it's, so I would say, what are you observing? What are you teaching and why? And then who? So again, is it the parent and this is a real teaching session? Is it the nurse that you're hand in hand working with during two-person care and you're going to teach them as you go? You know, I would just think about the questions of, you know, what are you there to observe? Because it is very instructive to observe. But, you know, almost always I would imagine that I would follow up, even if I'm just observing, to let the person I'm observing know, unless it's just the baby by themselves. But if there's a nurse caregiver there, if there's a parent there, I'm going to then kind of convey, you know, that, hey, this is just what I'm looking for. This is why. Here's what I saw. And you do some teaching. Of course, if it's just the baby, you're just observing, you know.
You're still the baby too. They may not respond to you.
Exactly.
Wally, but, you know,
exactly. They can feel you. So those are just some things to think about. And hopefully that gives you like a framework to think about those things, those questions. Anything else, Janine, on that?
You know, I don't know, hey, Amy, how long you've been in the unit before, so you might have been in there for 2 years or 30. But I think being able to identify the many different ways we show up, like looking at our core scope and looking at the topical areas that we might be intervening with or observing around, and having kind of having that framework for your staff so that you are in agreement with, I'm just thinking about the collaborative nature of working with another therapist, because I'm assuming that maybe you, there's more than you in the unit, or maybe it's just you and the nurses, but this gives you a framework from which you can discuss when you're at the bedside. So if you're looking at like feeding and you notice diaphragmatic breathing, you can talk about that out loud at the bedside with the nurse, and they get a peek into your professional reasoning. So it's just helpful to have your framework of the things, your work topics that you do, so that you can then understand better about what you're going to say to them in your teaching moment, and you'll have some reliability around how much time you actually need. You're going to know if that nurse doesn't get what you're saying, you need more time. But if they get it, then you're done. And so that's part of the how long, is meeting who you're talking to, whether it's a nurse or whether it's a parent or whether it's another coworker, another therapist. That kind of all comes into play too.
Oh, very true. And Amy, very new. Yeah.
Okay.
So thanks. And Amy, so let us know if this is making sense, since you said you're very new and just that we're sort of answering your question. And the other thing I would say is, if you're very new, that one thing that I think is vital when you're new to the NICU, among many, many other things, but is really observing a lot, even if it's, even if you have the luxury of it being not babies you don't even have an eval on or things, but just literally watching how babies look and act and transition and show stress at each different postmenstrual age or gestational age, because I think what later you forget that you had to learn is what's sort of typical and atypical for like 28 weeks and 29 weeks and 30 weeks. And so that you can start to, you have to see a lot of babies at those ages before you have a sense of like, is what you're seeing what you should be seeing? Because it's tempting at first, even if you come from a strong pediatric background, it can be tempting to see, you know, a 27 weeker as being hypotonic until you know how that tone develops and you see how it develops at different ages and all that. So I would just encourage you that if you have the luxury of doing a lot of just observation period of those different ages, kind of consciously trying to see like, okay, this is what tone looks like at this age and at this age and at this age, and this is what state transition looks like. So you can start to build your own repertoire of normal, so that when something does seem off, you will have a sense of it being atypical. So just wanted to throw that in there if you have the time to spend
doing it.
Thank
you for being so brave to just ask the questions. I love that.
Yeah. Says the professor. No, it's true. It's like that's your love. So the next, so I don't see any, right, we haven't missed any typed questions, I don't think.
We do have somebody that contributed to the clavicle.
Oh yes, thank you. Yes.
She said, we allow movement within tolerance and teach parents hemi-type dressing techniques. Education is posted regarding not moving the arm much with dressing and cares. So thank you for 007. Thank you, 007, for adding that information.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Really, that's funny.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're saying 007, that's what we're calling you, because that's how it shows up. But so that you're probably keeping movement mostly like below 90 degrees-ish, right, at the shoulder, and using those hemi dressing techniques so that you're decreasing the pain in that affected side. So if that's not what you're saying, let us know, but that's very helpful. Thanks for chiming in, because there's strength in that validity of hearing things from more than one place. So thank you.
Yep.
So the next email question says, in our hospital, we're attempting to organize a training module for OTs and PTs beginning to work in the NICU. Can anyone suggest guidelines and timetables they have utilized? So I don't know Carol, if you happen to be on this call, if you are, please, we'd love for you to raise your hand or type something in the window. Again, *9 if you're on the phone. And the reason we're asking if you're here is because this question could go 100 different ways depending on what you mean by a training module of for OTs and PTs beginning to work in the NICU. So Janine and I were talking before the call and just saying, you know, does that mean that you're just creating sort of an overview presentation and, you know, to like, in, here is the NICU in a giant, like high level way, and here's what you could be coming across. But training module suggests that it's maybe more than that. So we're just kind of wrap our brain around what you might be trying to do. As far as organizing something like that, we would suggest you can download the core scope of practice for neonatal therapy from the NANT website under resources, and it's free. And that it gives you a framework for the different categories of assessment and intervention that you would be kind of potentially responsible for in the NICU as a neonatal therapist, and at least in that core scope type of way. So it would, at least you wouldn't have to come up with a framework. So that's really helpful if you're starting from scratch. This is also what Ignite is, our program that's, I mean, it is a year long, and it's all that training and mentoring in those foundational pieces. And the only reason I'm bringing that up is because that's sort of the magnitude of the education needed to really work in the NICU. And so I would hate for you to spend 7,000 hours you do not have on your own trying to create something that already exists. So I just want to make sure that you do know about that resource. And if you're trying to just do something just small scale, like, you know, introduction, something like that, then that's where we'd say, you know, hey, take the course scope, create a an outline, and then maybe you can go from there. And if there's certainly anyone on the call who, just reading a question. So if anyone on the call has any more input on guidelines as you begin to work in the NICU, please feel free to raise your hand or type it in the chat window. If you already have something you'd be willing to share or that you're permitted to share from your hospital, we're happy to help that happen. You can also ask questions like this in the member forum, and then you can upload, you know, Word docs and things like that if you want to share that. So that's in your member hub under forum. So Carol, let us know if you're not on the call and you're listening to this later, you can always sort of write back in, ask us a more specific question about that, or if you have any questions about what we answered, or you could be like, you're way off. This is not what I really meant. So, just let us know how else we can help you, for that, because it doesn't look like you are, you know, live on the call. Okay, so Amy is saying back to us, yes, you are, so hopefully this is helpful. She's PRN. There's another full-time therapist who goes into the NICU from outpatient across the street. I want to know if making the NICU a more full or part-time position. When I go in, I can spend a lot of time with the infant. I have just been going in on my own to observe. Great. So good for you for thinking that way and for being on this call and taking advantage of the resources that are here and asking questions. So yay for you. And for carving out a bigger position.
Yes. And sorry, Sue, I think she asked, like, I want to know if making the NICU a more full or part-time position. So I'm thinking when you think about continuity of caregiving, just going in for a moment is challenging because there's so much that can be missed in the developmental pathway of a preemie. Or a sick full-term baby. And so if you, again, can use like the core scope and use, that must be the theme of the day. If you can use like, put together a justification of what you do, what you should be doing in best practice in the unit, what you could be doing, and then there is justification for having more contiguous time in the unit because of the workflow of the actual NICU. So I don't know if you're a level 2, level 3, how big it is, how many it is, but there, I think there's always room for considering what the workflow is and if you can support a regular therapist. So the end.
Yeah. Awesome. And then the 007 asked, I hope you show up that way every way, but
me too.
Every time, by the way. How are people positioning infants during gavage feeding that they are not able to be held for the full feeding? Great question. Not finding evidence that supports head of bed elevated, but many nurses still don't feel the need to do so. So, or need to elevate the head of the bed. So I love that you said when they're not being held, because that would be the gold standard. So thank you for just calling that out first, that if possible, we want to hold babies just for everyone listening. If we, or of course, parents, number one, if they're there, that they would hold their baby during the gavage feeding. And if not, that as staff, that we are able to do so as much as possible. So we all work, you know, in reality. So I always just say some and more is better than none. So if you can hold the baby for 15 minutes of the gavage feed is better than not at all. And 5 minutes is better than zero. So anytime we can, and putting your hands on the baby in more of a containment hold, if they're fragile or unable to be physically held outside of the isolette, is also better than not having any human interaction during a feeding. So we want to pattern that human nurturing part of feeding from admission as much as possible. So for the parents to be there and do that when, and then if they cannot be, you know, what can we do that's better than leaving them in isolation to be fed? But to get to your question, 007, if they cannot be held, what position should they be in? And I think that you are right in that there is even actually newer, there's a newer article, I think by the AAP and Committee on Fetus and the Newborn about, you know, reflux and positioning and that there is, that they kind of dispelled some of those myths. And I think we have posted that with these recordings before. So you might be able to just go back a couple months. It's pretty new. It was like in June maybe. So so you're right in that the evidence won't support the head of the bed being elevated. Otherwise, I mean, there are various articles that would support a certain side lying positions for a certain amount of time after feedings and all of the above. And while those things can be helpful, what I would also do is just pay attention to that particular infant. Because I think that what we all know, if you have children or whatever, that everybody's just different. And so while we might know a little bit about what we think might be helpful during and after a feeding, I think we also just need to get to know that infant and in that developmental care way of knowing their cues and how they react to things, how can we inform each other? That they typically do best in X position, at least for a certain amount of time. What we have to be careful there is that that's not the position the infant spends their whole life in. So, you know, it's tricky. Janine, any other thoughts on that positioning during feeding?
Those are exactly what I was thinking. But I will add that oftentimes when you are shifting from one way of being to another, that transition time can be somewhat uncomfortable. Like you may have a nurse who feels anecdotally that raising the head of the bed feels, you know, is got to help with this reflux. So there's kind of some space in time that can be somewhat challenging, and we have to have some patience with that for when we transition from one way of thinking about things to another. And again, it's about education and partnering with them to help gather some of that information, so that they have ideas about how to shift things as well. So just throwing that out there.
Yeah. Good thing to throw. So we still do not see any hands raised. So again, *9 if you're on the phone, or you can click to raise your hand if you want to talk to us verbally. I know we're in the world of texting, so people do like to type sometimes, but sometimes it's really efficient to have a conversation too. The next email question we have says, the therapists in my unit have taken up the developmental care committee. Do you have any favorite research references to support two-person cares with fragile infants and or primary nursing model? I am looking for information especially related to supporting outcomes of these interventions and parent satisfaction. So Jeanine and I talked about this before the call, so I'll just say a couple things, and then Jeanine, remind me of what I haven't. But I have looked specifically for this topic from a literature standpoint and haven't found, I don't think I came up with literally anywhere that said the words two-person care in this way. And I think what we're discussing beforehand is that two-person care is really sort of the practical, one of the practical expressions of providing great neurodevelopmental care, neuroprotective care, neurosupportive care, et cetera, in that if we're trying to decrease stress and encourage normal movement patterns and all the things that two-person care does when we do it well, I felt like in a lot of the literature, it sort of infers that we're doing these practices that do decrease stress, that help contain the baby, that, moving the baby slowly and doing things that require two caregivers because, whether you're suctioning, the nurse is suctioning the baby and you're providing the motor support, et cetera, it's going to just physically take two people. So there was a lot of alluding to it without getting to that exact point in the literature. That doesn't mean there isn't any. So I encourage you to do searches of your own, but I have, for whatever reason, just looked at that recently. And I don't know if you mean the two-person care tied to the primary nursing model, or if you're looking for things on the primary nursing model separately. So, but I do not have anything on that particularly because I just wouldn't normally be searching for that. But let us know if anyone's listening, if they have a different experience with that literature, that evidence for that particular model. And Jeanine, any other thoughts that we talked about? I can't.
Yeah. So I think from my standpoint, this is our opportunity to really engage our professional reasoning. And so I think when we were chatting before, you said something about being the practical application of why we do what we do. And so how you define the need for two-person care and what is going on at the time or when that might be really matters. For example, for suctioning, for if you have a 23-weeker and they need suctioning and you're trying to offer some neuroprotective care and support, then that makes sense to have two-person care. And you have to be able to, again, engage your own professional reasoning to clinical reasoning to talk about why that matters. And I was just kind of joking with Sue beforehand that, like, my analogy, which really doesn't fit perfectly, but it's kind of like if you have a baby and they have a blowout, right? You have some diapers you can change all by yourself. And then you have some diapers, it's like all hands on deck. This is a four-hander. And so you have to take different parts of the baby. So that's not an exact like analogy, but it says that there are some times where you can just do two-person care because you've got enough hands to be able to support the whole baby and looking at what we're trying to do. But there are many, many times where you need just that extra support to keep that baby calm and less stressed. That just having those extra set of hands on, there are many, many applications for that, where you can see the results of having that two-person caregiving, and you can articulate that as a therapist. You can point out the things that you observe that having that two-person caregiving is really facilitated from an outcome standpoint. Baby has been desatting all day, but when you have two-person caregiving in this one moment, this baby was so calm and regulated. What is it that happened? I'm just throwing out random examples, but I would continue to look for literature. There are going to exist gaps in what needs to be published. But we're doing things for specific reasons. You just have to know why. You have to be able to articulate why you're doing what you're doing. That's where the reliability is.
Thank you, Ms. Gray. You're welcome. So anybody else want to chime in on that? Please raise your hand or or you may type something in. I don't see any hands raised, so we'll just keep moving through email because we got about 20 minutes left. This one says, looking for job descriptions for neonatal therapists specific to OT, speech, PT, and developmental specialists. Also looking for best practice when setting up a comprehensive developmental program in the NICU. So we have a job description on the NANT website that is for neonatal therapy per se. It is not split out into OT, PT, and speech. But Janine, I think you said you'd be willing to chat with this person on offline about this.
Yes.
Okay. So Diane, okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's important to be able to know from your practice standpoint how you might see the same baby and how your goals might appear. For example, how they might appear differently from your discipline-specific lens. And so that's kind of the nuance that you might add to the job description. But there are foundational pieces of knowledge that we have to know as a neonatal therapist coming into the practice area. Do you agree to that, Sue?
Yeah. Yes, I do. And again, if you are live on the call and want to give any feedback, or if you ask this question and just want to have a conversation, sometimes that's much easier than us trying to infer from your email questions. Is a little tough sometimes. So I don't see any live questions, no new chat questions, right? We'll keep cruising unless seen. The next question says, do you have any resources on stress-free burping? Which just makes me smile for some reason. I think what I would point you to is just there is a little bit, I don't know if it's in NANS developmental care book, but there are a few resources that do mention just sort of techniques for burping and that, but I think stress-free might be a little bit of a misnomer because it doesn't mean that, you know, the baby's placidly going through happy field of something while they're getting burped. But I mean, I think we understand what you're saying is that a lot of burping in the NICU can look very intrusive or invasive or stressful. And when they're sort of pound, you know, for the for burping. So, you know, I think that, you know, having the baby, if they still have motor support and that during burping so that they're not stressed, but also just positioning. So really looking at, is the baby in a position where this air is able to escape? If you just look at the physics of things, so helping the baby, you know, that little pressure on the diaphragm and things that might just help this in the position of the baby, which happens very naturally if they're sort of on your chest or something where you can still see their face. Or if they're, you know, sort of out in front of you, but with some motor support. And then really that, you know, a combination of just like rubbing the infant's back, again, not super vigorously, but just it's the motion, it's the physics of it that is more important than kind of, you know, how hard we're pounding on this poor baby. So really watching that they have motor support, that we're not just mindlessly patting them on the back, and really looking at our technique for that. I know, and you know, it has been shown to be helpful even for feeding for some babies, you know, who might be prone to swallowing a little bit more air based on many different things that could be going on with them, you know, will benefit from some more frequent burping. And then I would just say technique-wise, as far as teaching and parents is getting rid of the old mentality that like we're watching the clock to burp or that we're watching the volume to burp and really paying attention to the infant cues. When I started in NICU, it was like, okay, we have to burp I forget if it was something super frequent, like every 5 or 10 mLs or something. Yeah, and it was like that. Yeah. It was like every 12 seconds, you know, like, so it's just like, this is going to take a year. And it was very, it interrupted the baby's rhythm. So if the baby's in a rhythm, let the baby be in a rhythm.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, they're going to tell us when they need to stop. They're going to slow down their sucking. They're going to give us cues that they need to burp or they're a little uncomfortable or wiggly. So, you know, just, I know that wasn't your question, but I have to just say part of the whole picture of that is understanding when and not just setting it by the clock or by volume. So, Janine, anything to add on that?
No, that pretty much covers it. I'm doing some research right now where I am watching babies being fed. And that's one of the things that I like, my radar is just like cued into. So I did kind of like when this question came up, I'm like, wow, what, how do we define stress-free? And this is something we could look at. So I agree with everything that you said, for sure.
Okay. Okay, anybody, if you have anything else to add, or you asked one of these questions, you want more clarification, or you think we totally missed your point, please let us know. We're happy to go back to something. And we have about 15 minutes left and just one more email question. So if you're sitting here nervously tapping on your desk thinking, should I be brave enough to say something out loud or to type in a question, just be thinking of it now, because as soon as we're finished with email questions, if there aren't live questions, we'll wrap up the call. But we save the whole hour because this is for you guys, you know, and we want to stay on as long as you want us to within that hour. So just be thinking of what you could ask. And it doesn't have to be some giant thing. It can be about a particular patient. We'll give you our best feedback or just something that's going on in any way in your NICU. So last question says, and came in under the wire today, so we wrote it on here, so thanks for typing this out today. Says, thank you for your strength and leadership. Mance is an invaluable resource, and I appreciate the education that it supports. So thank you so much for leading that way. Your questions are, what are the therapeutic interventions for clubfoot and flexion contractures? We have an infant girl, now 29 weeks, 28 and a seventh week gestation, born after rupture membranes at 17 weeks. Wow. She has significant range of motion limitations, including bilateral clubfoot and flexion contracture of one knee. She has full active extension, etc. Her mother is very involved. The infant is stable and tolerating daily kangaroo care. And she's stable on a vent, but stable. I am interested what techniques, improvements other therapists have seen with more extreme clubfoot postures. Thank you again. And love that we just got another text question while we were spurring people on. So we'll get right to you in 1 second. So I think Janine brought up a great point when we were talking about this before the call, is just one of the most important things that is in here is just that this infant is still 29 weeks. And so, what we would say for someone who's 29 weeks might look very different than, you know, a baby who's born at 35, 36, 37 weeks who has similar issues, primarily based on skin integrity. So anything that we're talking about from here forward, really, you'd have to consider the age of this infant and what can be done now versus what can be done later. And that right now the skin integrity is, I don't want to say more important, but it is of the utmost importance to consider while thinking about the club feet. So yeah, that lack of fluid from 17 weeks is something. So a couple things, I mean, I think it does just depend eventually. I typically would, if I was talking to you verbally, I would ask you what has your unit done in the past in this situation? Is there any guideline in place now, and what is that? And then I would ask you who follows up babies in your area that have this issue, and do you know what they do and when they do it and what they would recommend? So that, again, that continuum of care Janine was talking about, even after the NICU, and if especially picturing if you're the parent of this baby. So we want to be consistent across the board. So I try to like try to find out, you know, who's going to follow up this infant. And it, you know, if you work somewhere a long time, you get to know who's going to do that, unless they're sort of out of state and things like that. But just finding out who's going to follow them up, what do they, how do they want them to come to them? You know, do they, if they had their way, they would this baby have been getting gentle range of motion and massage for the last X many weeks based on, again, skin integrity, gestational age, appropriateness, all those things? Would they have been splinted? Would they have been had kinesio tape? So how would that practice best like you to manage it so that when they come to them as an outpatient or for follow-up, that they feel like you're all in alignment with what they would be recommending? Because the last thing we want to do is have this break where we've done something one way in the NICU and that's either not supported in the follow-up by the physicians who follow this infant up or the therapists who follow them up, or that it's incorrect, you know, based on maybe this is their number one shtick in the world and they're expert at it and they're a little bit more up on something than you are. And so it's just great to always check with the people who are doing the follow-up. Same with brachial plexus, same with all those types of things that we're kind of, we're managing in some way in the NICU, but that are going to require follow-up, cleft palate, all those types of things. So that's just sort of the background. So I think that depending on the severity and the age and the skin integrity, you know, some gentle range of motion, some massage, potentially kinesio taping, potentially splinting plus or minus. I mean, I didn't splint many babies ever in the NICU. I preferred to allow motion, and then work on the range of motion more manually or with kinesio tape or something that allows movement versus preventing it. And again, also with the skin integrity issues, you can get into issues with splinting. So, but at 29 weeks, this would look very different. Probably very, very gentle motion, put, you know, that type of thing until the infant's skin is able to tolerate massage or something later. So I think that that's something that you could start now. And then, you know, as their skin matures, as they're able to tolerate more handling, you could incorporate, you know, some massage and then some other of those techniques. But all of that being said, I would first do the other stuff. I would go see who's going to follow them up, see what the protocol is, see what they would recommend. And that way you're consistent and the parents don't lose their mind thinking this was done incorrectly in the NICU or it was done, you know, not in thinking what the future was going to look like and why didn't they know this and all that kind of thing. So really putting yourself in their shoes and doing that homework. Janine, what else did we discuss about that or anything to add?
Yeah, I think that covers everything that we kind of brainstormed through. Because that's a tough one. And the outcomes shift then, depending on how you address it. So I think you got everything.
Okay. Were you able to read the other one? Do you want to take a first stab at that?
I did, sure. So Judita, thank you for asking this question. I love it, actually. How early swaddling is appropriate for an infant, 27 to 28 weeks, gestational weeks? I get a lot of questions from nurses about swaddling, for example, very active small infant on ventilator or infant who constantly takes his tubes out. What about self-regulation and activities like hand-to-face or hand-to-mouth? Because usually swaddling for nurses means that infant is swaddled with hands tucked in a blanket and not near the face or clasped together. We unfortunately don't have positioning aids like dandel wrap or dandel stretch. So, Judita, I may ask you to, like, to speak, we don't like answer this correctly or the way you were thinking. So first of all, the swaddling piece, I totally agree. There's such benefit for the self-regulation, facilitating self-regulation. And that for me feels like an educational piece. The other part of this though, is when you consider a 27 to 28 weekers, what kind of physiological factors are happening at that point? Like, what's the medical condition of that infant? All those pieces matter. And if you've got a really rock star 28 week or 29 weeker who's not on event, and it seems to be pretty active, and you don't have positioning devices, then like how is thermoregulation being managed then if you're swaddling them? Because I'm assuming they're still in an isolate. So there, it's multifactorial, if you will, but I think that the biggest piece for me is for you helping the nurses understand from a touch standpoint, from a sensory system development standpoint, what the impact of swaddling these hands and show them a homunculus. There are some really crazy homunculus models out there that show the nerve endings and where they reside and how we impact the sensory system and skin and touch just with clothing or swaddling, et cetera. And what that also does for internal regulation of an infant. Like, are they like freaked out because they can't move anything? And so they just like shut down. That's how I think about somebody swaddling me, right? I'm like, oh my God, my hand. But that's like an adult cognitive level. So, so I think you ask a really great question, and I would start with what you would like for them to do. Would you like for them to swaddle and but allow their hands to be swaddled in a certain way that gives more touch to the skin to skin? Or is your preference to not swaddle at all for the 27 to 28 weekers and find another type of positioning piece? So do you want to add to any of that?
Not so much. I had the same question about thermoregulation as you did. So curious how that would happen in this situation. And then also just looking at different positions, you know, can the infant, if you don't have the positioning aid and they're kind of in this awake or frantic place, could they be in sideline, you know, where gravity is going to help them fall into that position more naturally, but maybe require less, you know, fewer positioning aids if you don't have them. And what else could the infant kind of wrap their hands around instead of their tube? and if you have like a wee thumbie or a tiny pacifier, you know, or a pacifier that can be used with the ventilator, does that keep them happier and less likely to be truly grabbing their ET tube? If the pacifier is helping them self-regulate in that way, but they still, like Janine said, have their hands like at least on their own chest or near their, you know, jawline, kind of like to their body still, and just not, you know, an extension. But again, it's tough because we don't want babies to be immobile. And we don't want them to be completely left in extension. And it's a fine line. We want movement, but we want some containment. And that's a tough thing to do without kind of the right products and the right things, or, you know, some products, I think. So I think you're thinking really well about this. And maybe some of the things we've talked about will just, you know, help in the moment. But I think there's no one answer, as much as looking at position, keeping as much touch as possible, looking at ways that you can have the infant have their hands somewhere else but close still to their body, using the pacifier, things like that, could be potentially helpful.
I have one other thing to ask you, Sue, if that's okay. So, Judita, you mentioned the hands, but I also want to, you know, just bring attention to the lower extremities as well, that, you know, when you have them swaddled, you just typed in, we do have snuggle ups and other positioning aids, and I agree with swallowing just with supportive self-regulation. Okay, so when you take all that and you know your unit, we don't, but if thermoregulation is not an issue and the infant has, because you need to look at their positioning of their pelvis, their knees, their hips, their everything, the lower extremities that you can't see, what's happening if they're swaddled and they're a 27-weeker? So I would have some questions about kind of positional outcomes if you are swaddling these babies regularly and there's no active movement. So just something to think about.
And thanks for the smiley face. All right, so it is top of the hour, so I think we're going to probably wrap up unless anyone's throwing a last minute question in there. We actually got through all the email questions too, so yay everybody.
Yay.
And we'll be posting the topics we covered and some of the maybe one resource that we talked about adding and hear about that with the recording. But thank you guys for using this resource, for being here, for showing up, for wanting to know more and do better. We appreciate that, and we know that babies do too, and your colleagues. So have a great rest of your day, and thanks for being here, everybody. Take care.
Bye, everybody.